If you want to explore how businesses actually use the massive amount of data they are collecting about you every day, you have landed on the right podcast. We look at the tech, people, and the processes cutting-edge businesses are using to collect data and answer the question, I have the data, now what? Here is your host, Asha Saxena.
Welcome, divers. This is your host, Asha Saxena for Dive with Data. As we continue our conversation about data in healthcare, we see that industry leaders understand there is an explosive potential of innovation in healthcare. With the top 10 largest tech companies like Apple, Google, IBM, they've invested about $3 billion in healthcare equity deals just last year. Groundbreaking innovation using artificial intelligence and algorithms means faster clinical trials, more accurate diagnosis, and ability to predict medical emergencies, ultimately improving personalized medicine. Google's DeepMind, an artificial intelligence company, has trained an AI algorithm using 3D scans to detect eye diseases more efficiently than human specialists. So today, on Dive with Data, we will be speaking with the Chief Analytics Officer of Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center, Ari Caroline. Also, Director of Strategic Analytics, Isaac Wagner. We'll be talking to them on how they transform analytics into personalized medicine for cancer patients. There are prime opportunities to improve how health systems use analytics. EMR data is not enough for predicting models. Clinicians can forget to input observations, and developing algorithms from unstructured data is incredibly challenging. With big data, there is the opportunity to enhance EMR data with passive or patient-reported data, such as eating habits, sleeping patterns, or GPS monitoring. Personalized medicine is a hot topic in the healthcare field. It involves tailoring medicines to person's unique genetic makeup and is developed by integrating a person's genetic blueprint and data on their lifestyle and environment, and then comparing it alongside thousands of others to predict illness and determine the best treatment. The FDA recently approved 10 of the personal genomics companies like 23andMe's screening test for genetic health risks, including one for Alzheimer's and one for rare blood disorders. The decision represents a turning point in the democratization of personalized medicine. For the first time, patients don't have to go through a physician to learn about their potential risk related to their own genetic makeup. Consumers' right to know their own genetic health risks will become more important as sophisticated diagnostics like targeted drug and gene therapies reaches doctors' office in years to come. Together, these tools can empower patients to become co-directors of their own medical destinies. In fact, the right to know the risk contained in your own genetic code will likely become the most fundamental medical right of 21st century. Consumer-facing companies have data sharing built into their business models. Accuracy and transparency attracts new customers. To its credit, Food and Drug Administration is increasingly embracing the future of big data and precision medicine. The agency has developed Precision FDA, an information commons where researchers and companies are working together to develop standards for the next generation of genomic sequencing tools and algorithms. So let's raise a glass to the future of precision medicine. After all, knowledge is power. And in our studio today, we have our guest Ari Caroline and Isaac Wagner to have an interesting discussion about this topic. Welcome on the show.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us. So, Ari, tell us, Chief Analytics Officer, what is that role and how did you get there?
Yeah, since we kind of had to make it up when I first took that role, I don't know if any formal definitions actually match what I did or what I do now. But it's been an interesting journey. When we started the analytics team at Sloan Kettering, the notion of analytics at an academic medical center was something pretty foreign, something that people weren't used to. And what happened was I was actually studying financial economics at Yale. We were expecting our fourth child, and kind of realized that it was going to be difficult to get by on the, whatever it was, $25,000 stipend for a year. I had done an internship earlier, previous summer, for Sloan Kettering, that had been arranged by my father-in-law, who was a biostatistician, just looking at whether we could trend some of the data, look at registrations and the like. And they liked what I did, and they said, you know, we'd love to make a full-time position for you. And so I left the PhD program, handed my dissertation off to a friend who needed it, and came to work at Sloan Kettering full-time. I think they realized pretty quickly that this was a capability that would be really useful to us. We started showing patterns that they hadn't seen before, helping the institution to understand what actually is driving people to seek care at Sloan Kettering as opposed to somewhere else, in ways that they hadn't realized, you know, that, you know, recognizing patterns they hadn't seen before. And so this decided, you know, we could scale this up. I was blessed within a year of working at Sloan Kettering, or maybe a year and a half, to have somebody pass on Isaac's resume, who was just finishing his undergraduate degree. He was the first person I hired. He now leads the strategy analytics team and has grown the institutional analytics capability quite a bit. And that's given me an opportunity to move on to some more novel ideas. Isaac would tell you, at least when he's being frank, you know, that I can't sit in one place for too long. And so we've grown to building a data products team with engineering capabilities, building actual tools that will be deployed in the institution, a new patient viewer platform with machine learning capabilities on top of it, and also exploring some of the potential commercial opportunities that arise from creating so much IP.
Very interesting. Seems like you're doing a lot of really fun stuff. New and innovative.
Yeah, I think that's what always attracts me. You know, it has to be new and exciting to keep my attention.
Yeah, very cool. You spoke about the mission, the reason why healthcare makes a difference. And personally, I feel that healthcare is such a, you know, difficult service provider right now for consumers, that even if you do a little bit good, it can have really a big impact, you know, for patients who end of life or pain relief and so on and so forth. Ari, you spoke about all these interesting projects you're really working on, innovation, and what projects are you working on, and how does that impact the mission Isaac spoke about?
So, you know, as Isaac said, I think the analogy of the kid in the candy shop is pretty apt. There are so many areas that we could focus on and really contribute. With the data products team that we've built, a lot of the focus has been on clinical research. And clinical research, particularly at an institution like ours at Sloan Kettering, where some 35% of our patients are on clinical trials, where clinical trials in oncology can be truly transformative. So there used to be a paradigm that signing up for a clinical trial was as much for the research as it was for the care, but that's largely changed, because the technology is advancing to the point where, you know, a patient who it accrues to a clinical trial and is cared for using a novel compound, a novel entity, is really, you know, more than likely to benefit from that compound, certainly with much greater odds than in the past. And so it's a service to our patients to get these patients on clinical trials. And what we've been able to do is to increase that likelihood by using machine learning models to match patients to clinical trials, by accruing a lot of information, by gathering a lot of information concerning the trials that's available in somewhat unorganized form in places like clinicaltrials.gov, and making it readily available to the people who are either trying to find a trial for a patient or who are leading a trial and need to find a patient population that would be appropriate for that trial.
So, you know, we talk about data and all these science behind the data, machine learning, deep learning, neural networks. Isaac, can you talk a little bit about what is all these technologies? And then Ari, I would like you to kind of jump on after Isaac and share with the audience what Isaac is talking about, what these technologies are, how are you applying it, you know? So give us some examples.
Yeah, sure. So I guess we could start with machine learning. The way I like to think about machine learning is it's the ability to extract insight out of a large amount of really low fidelity data. And that's generally what it means for us. It's data that was collected for various types of purposes, none of them having to do with what we were doing it for. It could be for billing, it could be for clinical care, it could be for compliance, and trying to take it and reuse it for really new kinds of purposes. Probably the most common thing in machine learning is prediction. What could we learn about the future with the data we have today? What repeated patterns? And that's a big theme in my group and in the institution is, you know, cancer patients come in. To what extent can we identify and understand certain types of patterns, and can we use that to predict? So a really large theme that we have is around using machine learning to be much more proactive in our care. And instead of waiting for a patient to have a pain emergency, what did we know about the patient in the past? You know, they complained a little, they called up twice, they were on a certain drug, and they have metastatic pancreatic cancer. You take a patient like that, what do we know about their behavior and what's going to happen to them in the next 2 months? And how does that knowledge change the nature of how we deliver care? And the reason why I think of it as machine learning is all this data that's used to build these models, not a shred of it, not a scrap of it was collected for that purpose. It was collected for very different purposes. So it's really reusing this stuff, kind of like data exhaust, reusing all this data for these kinds of purposes.
In some ways, that's the uniqueness of doing what we do in healthcare. The data are not of the best quality. So in an ideal world, typically, and I think it particularly in oncology, which is where cancer is the focus of Memorial Sloan Kettering, and particularly in oncology, a lot of the key clinical information simply is not captured in readily available structured fields that are easy to access. So in an ideal world, if you can imagine an ideal world where all of the important clinical information were captured, you know, in a database as soon as there's somebody sitting with the physician and the patient capturing all of the key clinical points in structured fields, and all of that is available to us so that we know all of the key clinical information, the truth is we probably wouldn't, for the most part, we wouldn't need tools like machine learning to answer a lot of these questions. We could use traditional statistical analytics tools like logistic regression, generalized linear models. The issue, as Isaac said, is that we're dealing with data that are less than perfect. And when you have a lot of unstructured, messier data, you need better tools to find the patterns within those data. And so that's probably the primary use, our primary current use for machine learning. And when we say machine learning, that most of the time nowadays, that's referring to neural networks and specifically deep learning models, where you're, and within that actually, it's supervised models are the most typical, where you actually have a lot of messy data. You have some manual effort that's been gone through where somebody is actually going and trying to extract information from that data, and you use that process to train the machine learning models. And so that's really what's required in healthcare right now in order to get the clinical information that we need. But I think what we're starting to just push over the threshold where we're seeing some novel patterns and be able to actually build up a level of data infrastructure and a level of insight that we're starting to get to the point where we're actually generating novel insights.
So if you had to say, in today's day and age, in your organization, what is the most successful application of machine learning? I know you sit in strategic analytics. Have you implemented something in last 12 months which you feel that has had an impact?
From the operational side, there's really a lot of very good examples. I could start with our call center. And, you know, this is the first contact patients have with MSK, and they're scared, and they maybe have cancer, maybe they know they're diagnosed with cancer, and they just want a really smoothened process. And, you know, a lot of, you know, really, really good but basic analytics were applied to understand what about the call and the way the people who picked up the call led to sort of a better kind of conversation. what, you know, how important is the wait time for patients? How important is the need for specific documents? So it's, you know, useful for doctors to have CT scans, but it also could delay the process. So we learned a lot about that and sort of changed the process of intake, and that was really impactful in its ability to bring patients in sooner, to have a smoother conversation, and to really be much more data-driven in that process. And, you know, that's a sort of a traditional analytic application, but it's something that I think was sort of particularly impactful recently.
You know, Isaac also spoke about the predictive model. What about prescriptive? What do you think, Ari, prescriptive analytics is coming, and where does the AI play a role, artificial intelligence, and do you think Watson's going to take over the world and we're going to build technologies which is going to just remove, you know, less and less doctors and more technology, you know, prescribing?
Yeah, I don't think there is any risk at all of us, you know, replacing doctors anytime soon. The complexity of the way they practice is such that, you know, the current AI tools don't really get close. There is, however, one unique area where it's possible to imagine that happening sooner. And that's particularly in an area where AI and the AI models that are already performing well in terms of image recognition, computer vision models, have a potential role in healthcare as well, and specifically within pathology and radiology. So in pathology, you're analyzing the slide of tissue and looking at the particular cells and looking for the morphology of those cells and trying to analyze where the cancer might be, whether there is cancer, the particular histology of that cancer. And that's the type of tool thing that you could train a computer to do. And the same with radiology images. When you're looking at CT scans, MRI studies, those are images that can be analyzed and they can be tagged by the experts. And you can then use that as training material for machine learning models. The reason it doesn't exist yet, because, you know, you think we've already advanced in computer vision, is because we don't have people doing what they do for Facebook right now. So we train the Facebook models by tagging people's faces, and at this point, you know, the models have gotten so good that they don't actually need us to tag them. They just make the suggestion themselves. But that's because millions of people tagged billions of faces and to help to train those models. So what we need is a similar effort in pathology and radiology, where we have the top experts in the field say, this looks like a metastatic site, this looks like a mass over here, this type of cell looks mutated in this particular fashion that would give me an indication that it's this particular histology. And we need the tools to allow them to label the images in that way. So a new company has actually emerged from the efforts of one of our labs in pathology, a lab led by Thomas Fuchs, a brilliant scientist who came to Sloan Kettering from NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory.
Wow, very cool.
Started a laboratory in pathology, built the tools to label the pathology slides digitally. We've scanned and labeled tens of thousands of slides at this point. And it's already producing incredible results where we're seeing patterns from the images that are indicative of particular types of mutations and that the computer is recognizing. And that's recently been spun off into a company called Page AI.
Oh, very nice. Yeah. And does, when you spun this company out, does Sloan Kettering have a venture arm which invests in these companies? Do you own the IP?
So that's a good question. We have a traditional tech transfer group, which is worked with a lot of typically molecules, compounds that have been developed as potential drugs by our research groups. And so the knowledge tech space is somewhat new to them, but we are actually working very closely with them to develop better types of models for how to do this right now. Right. So if we had the ideal structure, we would want to say, you know, we might want to maintain some rights to the IP that allows us to tag those pathology slides and use that for radiology as well. So those are the types of learnings that happen over time. Certainly, Sloan Kettering takes some equity in these new ventures, and there's some significant upside potential from that.
Yeah. I'd like to, if I can, answer your doctor question. If you think about some of the things the doctor does, they're really nuanced and they're very human. So two patients come in, one's complaining about a level 7 of pain, and one is a level 2 pain, and the doctor knows it's the same pain, it's just the reaction to it is different. And how the doctor consoles the patient and what drugs they do is based on this real body of nuance and human and empathy. And if we just fed that into a computer, it would be a 7 and a 2.
Right.
Right. And that's going to take a really long time for technology to catch up to that. Or balancing different kinds of goals, balancing, you know, the need to provide patients with dignity, the need to inform their family, the need to try to cure them or bring them in comfort. These are very complicated emotional human tasks. And these are the kinds of things I think that computers are particularly far away from doing.
Mm.
You know, there's a great story told by Larry Norton, who's the head of our breast division. He's the former president of ASCO. He's a very well-known physician in breast oncology. And there was a patient that he was treating and had to consider a couple of different treatment options. And one of them was known to be more likely to cause neuropathy in the extremities, where patients lose some dexterity and feeling in the fingers and the toes. And it was his insight, his conversations with this patient, being a musician himself, in addition to being a world-class physician, that he came across that this was a violinist, and playing violin was a huge part of her life.
Mm.
And that, of course, impacted his decision in terms of which treatment course to get.
How important is the value of data? I know you spoke about having large volume of data helps you. What are the other elements, our audience, if they're trying to go build a team and you apply data to for an application, what are the important elements in having the right data and having the right use cases?
Yeah, sure. So a big part of this is having an organized process of how to think and manage it. So data governance. So really knowing what you're looking for, what questions you're going to answer, and how data is going to do it for you, and organizing it. Having a common language for data. So for instance, you want one way to get all diabetic patients. And so you want to have resolved out how do you take lab results and drugs and diagnosis codes and the various different, hints in the system that this patient is diabetic and put it together to say, this is what we think is a diabetic and not. And if different groups and different people have different definitions of what a diabetic is, it's very, very hard to make progress. So a big part of the data is sort of that kind of organization.
And we probably went in reverse order at Sloan Kettering. We developed the analytics and machine learning capabilities before getting to the core data. And the result is that you have your brilliant data scientists spending 80 to 90% of their time on data resolution, data munging, data cleanup, data wrangling, whatever you want to call it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not the most efficient use of their time, and it also means that the rate of progress is significantly slowed. So it's really well worth, as Isaac was describing, investing in your data governance, making sure that you understand how things are captured, whether they're captured consistently from different sources, and making sure that you understand the data and how they relate to the business is absolutely essential and probably a worthwhile exercise even before building an analytics team.
Last question. One advice you would give to the audience, which has helped you succeed in your career. I'll start with you, Isaac.
So we're in technology. So patience. Things happen very gradually. It's hard to see progress. And then all of a sudden, many, many things might happen at once, and you might see a real impact. So things could take a very long time, and it could be very hard. So I think it's very important to I mean, to have patience and not to give up too quickly.
I would say in my 15 years, I'm still trying to learn that lesson of patience. But perhaps I've learned a smaller lesson over this time, which is, and Isaac has been a big part of teaching this lesson to me, which is balancing in, how much you promise. Not over-promising things. That I don't think I've ever over-promised in an area where I didn't actually believe that we could deliver, but because I didn't have perhaps the patience to realize the scope of the undertaking, that can often lead to, you know, to some degree a loss of credibility when it turns out to be a much bigger project than you thought it would be. And so balancing the excitement of the potential, which is really comes naturally to me, with realistic expectations, is a challenge, but it's a skill that's well worth developing.
That's a very good advice. I think patience, I hear that over and over again in technology. You need patience. Things don't happen overnight. And I think having the over-promise and under-deliver is not a good strategy. So really great advice.
Now, you don't want to under-promise also, right? You want to make sure that you're generating the proper level of excitement that's reflective of the underlying potential. But you have to balance that with the realism of what it takes to actually deliver.
I agree. You know, I could go on talking to you. I wish we had another 3 hours to go. Mm-hmm. The conversation has been so interesting and so informative. I know for sure that the audience is going to love it and would want us to bring you back. Mm-hmm. So with that, I will say thank you so much for coming and being on the show and sharing the information you have, and thank you for sharing what you actually need. So I'm hoping that someone from Apple or someone from another innovative device would come to you and reach out to you. So thank you so much.
I completely enjoyed my conversation with Ari and Isaac. As we heard, analytics is getting strategic positioning within organization. Impact of analytics is not just operational, but it's helping create new business and growth models. Analytics is not just about helping in making decisions, but it's the magic behind discovering and recognizing patterns and behaviors of the data. This world of analytics need people who are curious and can learn from these data discoveries. So let's continue our journey together being curious. We'll continue our conversation in next episode about healthcare and data. Till then, goodbye from your host, Asha Saxena.
We just scratched the surface of data with today's episode. If you want to join in the full conversation, check us out at divewithdata.com or follow us on Twitter at divewithdata. And as always, leave us a rating and review if you enjoy the show. Your feedback is what keeps this podcast going. Have a great day.